Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for September the 9th, 2018. Welcome to our weekly look at the world of politics and policy as we take a look at City Hall, the state capitol in Springfield, all the way to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a great start. Well, actually, I'm wondering, is this the Sunday Spin or is this actually the Bears pregame start?
It could very well be, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, and let's face it, we're all anxious. We're all excited. Big game, Green Bay, the biggest rivalry in professional sports, mm-hmm. as far as
started the regular season for them.
Yes, and we finally get to see some plays that count.
Yeah.
Some games that count. And we get to see who the Bears are, at least for week one.
Yeah, they get to unwrap all the shiny new toys that they have.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm excited about it. I really am. I'm not saying they're going to have a great, great season, but I'm thinking now 8-8.
Yeah, that's probably a good guess. I think a lot of people were thinking 6-10 before the Khalil Mack trade. And I think that's worth a couple of games at least. I'm thinking that it's going to make them a Super Bowl contender at this point. But
right.
You have to figure out what's going to go on with the offense, and can Mitch Trubisky handle the complicated offense that Matt Nagy is bringing in?
And can the offensive line handle
hold it? Right.
Yes.
Exactly. So I mean, he's got some new weapons as wide receivers, Allen Robinson, and Trey Burton, who's coming in from the Philadelphia Eagles as well on the tight end, and Jordan Howard. Coming off another 1,000-yard season. So it's up to basically Trubisky to, I guess, you hate to put that pressure on a kid, but, hey, you know, you're the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. You gotta perform.
Yeah, and it's not like he doesn't know that's the pressure. You
True.
Know? That's why you're the quarterback. That's why you're there. That's the job you want.
Yeah, very true.
So, I mean, let's go Bears. Let's go Bears.
I like the fact that you're in your festive Hall of Fame Brian Urlacher jersey.
Well, I just...
And the orange one, nonetheless.
I commemorate the...
Don't forget the hat.
And the hat.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
No, I'm doing my best
that's
here.
That's good.
I mean, talk to me next Sunday. We'll see.
Won't be long.
He'll be wearing his Blackhawks jersey.
I was going to say, yeah. It won't be long before we see the Blackhawk.
I know. We're about a month away.
Sure. Yeah, training camp starting soon, too.
Right. But the 7th of October?
Yeah. Coming up?
Yeah. So, but we'll be talking a lot of Blackhawks. You can be sure of that. But if you can't have any luck,
mm-hmm.
you're the White Sox, right?
Yeah,
that Kopech news, Michael Kopech going with Tommy John surgery.
Yeah,
out till 2020. Boy, talk about a deflator!
It was a really surreal day because we were sitting in the dugout waiting for the manager, who usually comes out, you know, for a 7 o'clock game. He'll come out about 4:15, and we usually just kind of, you know, wait in the dugout for him. And we were sitting there, the group of reporters. And the general manager comes out, and we're thinking, okay, what's going on here? I mean, did they reverse their course? Maybe Eloy Jimenez is coming up. We had no idea what to think. And then Rick Hahn sat down and uttered those words about the significant tear in the ulnar collateral ligament. Those are the ones you don't want to hear about.
Man.
And Kopech pretty much done for this year, next year, probably ready to go in 2020. If there's a silver lining to the whole thing, it's he's a young guy and can probably recover just as fast, if not faster, than everybody else. And the track record you have now, there's several guys in the organization itself right now that have gone through this and have come back. Some of them have come back throwing harder. Some of them have come back throwing better sliders. So I don't know if it's something that might have been nagging him that he didn't even realize, and he maybe has changed his mechanics. But we knew something was off the other night against Detroit. His velocity was way down.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, like you are, about whether this was some kind of nagging issue. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, total pitches thrown. I mean, because of those wonderful rain starts.
Yeah, not too many.
So, I mean, what was his longest outing? Six innings?
Six innings, yeah. It was against the win he got against Detroit at Detroit.
But, yeah, so, I mean, it just didn't sound right.
Yeah, and he can't really quite pinpoint when it happened, which I got to give him credit, though, because a lot of guys in that situation who are just getting to the big leagues for the first time aren't going to say anything
right,
about
exactly.
some discomfort.
Right.
And he did, and the White Sox rushed to get him all the medical exams that that were required. And unfortunately, nobody expected the outcome. I don't even think the doctors, after initial examination, expected what they saw. And that's too bad. He's going to get a second opinion sometime this week, but it's pretty much going to result in the surgery.
You got to figure.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening with the Cubs?
Well, the Cubs are being victimized by the Major League Baseball scheduling, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it was awful the other night. The Friday night, they waited and waited and waited and waited and didn't play. And then all of a sudden,
it was past 10:30 Central time, wasn't it?
Then it stopped raining right after they called the game. And then yesterday, they played this doubleheader that gets delayed by a rain
right.
a total of 3.5 hours. And the only reason that you do this is because the Cubs only come to Washington one time, and you try to get the games in because both teams obviously need it for integrity of the schedule and playing toward the top of their divisions. And it can all be solved kind of nicely if Major League Baseball would go back to the schedule where, you know, interleague was a dynamic thing and not an everyday occurrence. And you got to play the teams that you're supposed to play a couple of times, so you don't have to worry about these doubleheaders all the time or waiting out a 3.5 hour rain delay if you're not going to play.
Yeah, I just... And plus the fact that other than that rainout, that was it's a streak of 23 straight games.
Yeah, and the White Sox were in that stretch until their day off the other day. They hadn't had one off since August 16th, and that was all because of a makeup game that they had to go to Minnesota after that early season snowout. The four games got banged by snow, and they still have to make one. They have to make one up at the last Saturday of the season, a day night doubleheader in Minnesota. I mean, but that's the situation where you can do that because now you can look forward to that and you can prepare for that because you go back to Minnesota twice.
And you hope it doesn't snow again.
And you hope it doesn't snow again
right,
in September. Which
by
it,
the end of the season.
Which it could. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to deal with. You know, obviously, as a player and being in the broadcast realm of that as well, just sitting there.
Right.
And not knowing if you're going to play. And then you hear you're going to play and then you don't play. Or you hear you're not going to play and then you do play. It's difficult to turn the engine on and off and expect it to be at full running capacity when they tell you to turn it on.
Well, I kind of felt that way about the first game with the Cubs
yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, Max Scherzer didn't help.
No.
He's pretty good right. if people haven't heard of him.
But I thought, you know, the second game, and I'll admit I crashed before the end of the second game.
Yeah.
But I thought, okay, they seem to have things in hand, and then only to see this morning that they ended up losing.
Bryce Harper had a big two-run homer in the seventh inning, and that helped the Nationals to the win in come-from-behind fashion. So, you know, the lead's down to 2.5. It's been down this close, you know, over the course of the last couple of months. You know, and the Brewers tried to help themselves. They got another relief pitcher from the White Sox, and they got a starting pitcher, Gio Gonzalez. But I don't know if they have enough consistent starting pitching to get that job done against the Cubs in the Central.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it does make things exciting, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, who wanted this to be? You know, you don't want it to be easy. Come on.
Well, and
that would be way too. That would be boring.
And as a friend said, do you really want them to coast? And,
well,
and going to the playoffs?
That's true. Well, they did, though, in 2016. They kind of coasted in. And
yes.
They were able to set their rotation and rest guys, which does help. But at the same time, you'd like to see them playing their best ball heading into the playoffs.
Right. Have some energy to go in
yeah.
to the playoffs. We'll keep an eye on that. And, by the way, Dave, I got to let you know that when I crossed over Wacker Drive over by the Michigan Avenue Bridge, that bagpiper I told you about.
Oh yes,
he wasn't there.
No, I think he may have ended after Labor Day.
No, he was replaced by two guys, one wearing a Trump mask and another wearing a Kim Jong Un mask.
No
yes.
way
to pose for pictures with tourists.
Okay.
Yeah. I heard the bagpipe guy, the Sunday that you first brought him up when I was leaving work, and I head down that way. I was happened to be heading back that way after work on the that Sunday, and sure enough, I'm hearing do 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 do. You know, so.
Yeah. See, I wasn't kidding.
No, you weren't.
But yeah, I will say after Labor Day and walking on Michigan Avenue, you could tell like. Quote, end of summer occurred. It was,
oh, yeah.
The sidewalks were very, very empty.
Yeah.
And yesterday there was a little pickup in traffic and that kind of thing, but still not like the pre.
Not with the families out, right. and
school off.
Yeah.
And warm weather.
Yeah. People seem to get, get a last fling in before Labor Day. There were a lot of people out.
That's what they call the Naperville Festival. It's true.
That's Labor Day Festival. That's right.
The last fling.
We mentioned that on the Dean's program last week, but yeah. The people were downtown all over Millennium Park and right up to and including Labor Day weekend. So,
and you know, so much for a short week last week.
And I was going to say to you, have you caught your breath yet?
Not at all.
What, something happened?
Well, it's been amazing.
It really has.
You know, Tuesday and the news about Mayor Emanuel not seeking a third term. And then you go into Friday and you've got former President Obama at the University of Illinois, where he decides to kind of lift the longstanding tradition that you don't talk about your successor, and did it in a pretty heavy way. I mean, it's just been.
Did it again in Orange County.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the template was set.
Exactly.
In Urbana.
Yeah.
And, but it's just been nonstop, and maybe that's why I'm looking forward to the Bears. Is maybe just kind of a chance to
nice distraction.
Yeah, turn the channel a little bit and watch that game. But as I said, let's go Bears. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy will field all the latest sports. Producer Kassara will take your phone calls. We're at 312-981-7200. You can also text us at 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is looking at throwing his hat into the race for mayor. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. It's Sunday morning, and welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Time to kick off our weekly spin through national politics. And on Friday, as I said, former home state President Barack Obama was back in Illinois at the University of Illinois to receive an ethics award. He also did, as I said, something unusual in that instead of former presidents kind of relegating themselves to the sidelines and not speaking about their successors, well, Obama issued a full-throated attack on Donald Trump and the Republican Congress. And here are some of the highlights.
Over the past few decades, the politics of division and resentment and paranoia has unfortunately found a home in the Republican Party. They're undermining our alliances, cozying up to Russia. What happened to the Republican Party? Its central organizing principle in foreign policy was the fight against communism, and now they're cozying up to the former head of the KGB. And by the way, the claim that everything will turn out okay because there are people inside the White House who secretly aren't following the president's orders, that is not a check. I'm being serious here. That's not how our democracy is supposed to work. They're not doing us a service by actively promoting 90% of the crazy stuff that's coming out of this White House and then saying, don't worry, we're preventing the other 10%.
So that's the president's comments. Then you had the President Trump campaigning in North Dakota after a very bad week. And Trump says that a reporter asked him if he had watched former President Obama's speech.
What do you think of President Obama's speech? And I said, I'm sorry, I watched it, but I fell asleep. I found he's very good. Very good for sleeping. I think he was trying to take some credit. He was trying to take credit for this incredible thing that's happening to our country. If the Democrats could, and I have to say this to President Obama, and it wasn't him, but would have been the same thing. If the Democrats got in with their agenda in November of almost 2 years ago, instead of having 4.2 up, I believe, honestly, you'd have 4.2 down. You'd be negative. You'd be in negative numbers right now.
So you have Trump talking about the economy, but as I said, it was a bad week for Trump, and it started out with the coverage about the Washington Post Bob Woodward's new book on the Trump presidency. The title of that book? Fear. Woodward also released a tape of him speaking to Trump in August. Trump was asked, why didn't you agree to an interview with Woodward? And it's clear from the conversation that Trump staff kept Woodward away from the president. Here's some of that conversation.
You need to know I made maximum effort.
All right, it's too bad.
Yes, sir.
I'm just hearing about it, and I heard I did hear from Lindsay, but I'm just hearing about it. So we're going to have a very inaccurate book, and that's too bad.
No,
but I don't blame you entirely.
Be accurate.
All right. Okay. Well, accurate is that nobody's ever done a better job than I'm doing as president. That I can tell you. So that's and that's the way a lot of people feel that know what's going on, and you'll see that over the years. But a lot of people feel that, Bob.
So, as usual, with anything the president doesn't like, he says it's not real, it's fake. Even coming from one of the most respected political journalists of our time. So when he was asked about Bob Woodward's book, what did the president say?
The book means nothing. It's a work of fiction. Already General Mattis has come out very, very strongly. And I think you know General Mattis. He does what he wants to do. He's a very independent guy. He was insulted by the remarks that were attributed to him, and he came out with a very strong statement. I assume you read it. I hope you read it last night. General John Kelly, the same exact thing. He thought he was insulted by what they said. He's right here. He's insulted by, he couldn't believe what they said. And he put out a very, very strong statement, and many others, and other statements are coming out. The book is a work of fiction. If you look back at Woodward's past, he had the same problem with other presidents. He likes to get publicity, sell some books.
Yeah, it's all about selling books for Bob Woodward. Two Pulitzer Prizes, the history going back to Nixon's downfall and Watergate. So you've got Bob Woodward's book, Fear. Then there's the anonymous op-ed by a senior administration official in the New York Times. And that said that there's an active resistance going on in the White House, that there are adults to prevent the compulsive president's worst actions. But again, to Trump, it's fake, despite a desperate search by the White House and Trump for the author. Here's Trump.
Someday when I'm not president, which hopefully will be in about 6.5 years from now, the New York Times and CNN and all of these phony media outlets will be out of business, folks. They'll be out of business because there'll be nothing to write and there'll be nothing of interest. So nobody has done what this administration has done. And I agree, it's different from an agenda, which is much different than ours. And it's certainly not your agenda, that I can tell you.
Thank you.
It's about open borders. It's about letting people flee into our country. It's about a disaster and crime for our country. So they don't like Donald Trump, and I don't like them because they're very dishonest people.
So there you have the president's take. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson from the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Last week in Washington, we had all of the Trump news. In the meanwhile, there was the ongoing confirmation hearings of Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. Democrats complaining of a lack of released records to judge the judge. Senator Cory Booker releases some controversial confidential documents. And then Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy asks Kavanaugh, does Trump have the power to pardon himself?
President Trump claims he has an absolute right to pardon himself, does he?
The question of self-pardons is something I've never analyzed. It's a question that I've not written about. It's a question, therefore, that's a hypothetical question that I can't begin to answer in this context as a sitting judge and as a nominee to the Supreme
Court. And the other half of that is the obvious one. Does the president have the ability to pardon somebody in exchange for a promise from that person they wouldn't testify against him?
Sarah, I'm not going to answer hypothetical questions of that sort. And there's a good reason for it. When we get briefs and arguments of the parties. We have a record. We have an appendix with all the information. We have amicus briefs. And then I never decide anything alone. I'm in a panel of three, and if I'm confirmed to the Supreme Court, I'd be on a team of nine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope for the sake of the country, that remains a hypothetical question.
But the concerns about Kavanaugh aren't entirely reserved for Democrats, particularly with Trump and a continued investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Here's retiring Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake.
I think it's very concerning. He said in a tweet, two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department, he calls it. Two easy wins now in doubt because there is not enough time. Good job, Jeff. That is why a lot of people are concerned about this administration and why they want to ensure that our institutions hold. Thus far, they have. Gratefully, Jeff Sessions has resisted pressure from the president to punish his enemies and relieve pressure on his friends.
That's Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake. Well, now joining me on the show is my good friend, Michael Golden. Michael, I don't know how to describe you. You're a man of many hats.
Or spread too thin. You could put it either way. I like the Brian Urlacher jersey and matching cap. Don't think just because I'm not there, I don't have the live stream going.
Well, very good, very good. I keep forgetting about that kind of thing on some various Sunday mornings, but I have to celebrate the Bears. What can I say?
Absolutely,
they're in first place right now.
You know, I'd be wearing Bears or even Hawks if I were there right now.
I understand. Well, I wanted to start our conversation by talking about this past week with Trump and the issues involving Bob Woodward's book, details in that book that things like you have Gary Cohn, when he was in the administration, removing pages from documents so that Trump wouldn't sign ways for us to get out of a trade deal. I mean, just the machinations of chaos that it seemed to exist in this White House, manifested, of course, by that op-ed.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't think hardly anybody was surprised to hear about the content in the book and in that op-ed. I think that the new dimension, two new dimensions, but one is that it was finally documented with multiple sourcing by a trusted, credible, historic journalist, and then also by someone within the administration. And it's not as much what they said, it's that the New York Times chose to publish it, and not just a paragraph or two, but a full editorial, which, as a former journalist, I really objected to. But that's a different issue. I mean, at the same time, Rick, how much does that stuff matter? What you just played in those sound bites is what really matters when it comes to governance and the Trump voters, for the most part, getting what they wanted, a second conservative justice on Supreme Court. It's highly unlikely that Kavanaugh is going to lose the vote. It's right. A matter of really 53 or 55 votes, depending on if any of the red state Democrats get coerced politically into voting for him to try to retain their seats. But that's the big deal, you know. That's the Faustian bargain that was struck more than 2 years ago. This guy is a disgusting person, but we will get some things. Hopefully we'll get tax cuts. Hopefully they'll do something to Obamacare. And he'll appoint not just Supreme Court justices, but up and down the circuits and appeals court. And that's what he's done. McConnell getting rid of Garland and then getting these two judges will be in the first paragraph of his eulogy.
Well, and this is, elections have consequences.
Right.
And you know, this is kind of the proof of that. And it's not, you know, when we look at candidates when they run, there is the candidate, there is the persona, but at the same time, there's also, you know, the things that they can effect.
Yeah, and actually, it's a perfect segue to the midterms 8 weeks from Tuesday. And you know, I have an article coming out tomorrow in the New York Daily News with Norman Ornstein. And the point of what we write is that this is the one backstop that if people do object to Trump and if people want to see the investigation continue and find answers, then they have to flip the House. There won't be any oversight hearings. There won't be new public hearings. There won't be even articles of impeachment voted on, much less a Senate trial, unless that chamber, the House, flips. And those will be the consequences. So all these candidates, the Democrats, a lot of them are running, trying to not run their campaigns based on impeachment, right? Because they're trying to run on issues and keep, but it's already out there. People know what's going on. And that election day really could foretell a big part of our future. Because if the Democrats don't take back the House, this whole investigation, no matter what Mueller reports, it's likely to just go away.
Well, and as you both write, you know, it's as Billy Crystal told Meg Ryan and right. When Harry Met Sally, it's already out there. And so do you think Democratic candidates should double down on impeachment?
I didn't say that. I'm asking you. I don't.
Because everybody's dancing with it.
Right. No, it's a great question, and that's a, you know, I don't. Because like you quoted me quoting when Harry met Sally, people know that. However, it's an incredibly polarizing issue. It seems more divisive. It seems to attack all Republicans and maybe even swing voters who voted for Trump. Not that you don't want to get those swing voters, but this is a turnout election. Truly, truly, whichever party it turns out more in these districts are going to win the seats. And, I mean, Democrats are on fire already. I don't know if they need impeachment for that. So any potential swing voters that you're going to add to your bracket, you want to talk about the issues that the polling's going to tell you that matters, and most of it is wages and health care.
Well, and as we were saying about elections have consequences, if the I word keeps getting thrown out there, that could also be something that could energize Republican voters.
Absolutely. Just be. So could Obama coming out this week. I mean, that could get you. Look.
And I wondered about that, too, about, you know, as I said, kind of the breaking of that tradition. And yet, let's face it, Republicans, they are no fan of Barack Obama.
Right. And don't forget those 200 counties that went for Obama twice and then switched over to Trump, which still astonishes me. But but here's the thing, Rick, that all these things are cost benefit analyses. Right. So
right.
President Obama, and I assume his advisors too, but it's a very small circle, they did that cost-benefit analysis and came to the conclusion that, hey, if we have to get young voters out, then we will win the midterms for sure. If they don't come out like they didn't in 2010 and 14, those two midterms, and we got clobbered, we could have a problem. We still might win, but that the insurance policy is to get young voters fired up. And that's why he did it at the University of Illinois. And he's talking to places where he's talking about young people getting out and voting. That's what he's stressing the most.
Well, and as he cited in that U of I speech, that, you know, one in five was the youth vote.
Yeah, that's a shocking number too. Even in light of, you know, if you follow elections, knowing that younger people accepting Obama's first election, just they don't vote in the same numbers. 1 in 5 is pretty shocking if you think about it.
But we always hear about, you know, these efforts to motivate youth vote.
Always. And,
but it doesn't seem to materialize.
It doesn't, but I would argue that on the counterpoint to that is that young people have never seen a year and a half of a presidency like this.
Well, no one has.
Yeah. No, right, but especially them. So a lot of people already vote and haven't seen it. The question is, will this motivate them to get out in a midterm, not in a presidential, in a midterm?
We're speaking to Michael Golden, my good friend, strategist, author, entrepreneur, senior fellow at the Adlai Stevenson Center on Democracy. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, speaking with Michael Golden, strategist, author, entrepreneur, senior fellow at Adlai Stevenson Center on Democracy, available for house parties.
At a low rate, at a very low rate.
Once again, Michael, thank you so much for joining me. I want to switch gears and bring things a lot more local here, obviously. The stunning news Tuesday that Rahm Emanuel would not seek a third term as mayor of City of Chicago. I'm not sure anybody necessarily really saw that coming. He'd been raising money. Things seemed to be, everybody knew that it would be a very brutal election. But nevertheless, you know, you're somebody who's worked for him. You've worked against him. But this is a guy that, as we write in the Sunday paper, that, you know, he's been successful in many ways, in part by being a political bully, and now he doesn't have the fight.
Yeah, I think everybody I know is shocked, even people that are close in. Like you said, there's people running that campaign. I know a couple of them. And raising money up until last week at a really fast clip and large amounts. He had a huge war chest. It's a shocking thing, and people have been asking. I'm sure they're asking you too all week. Why do you think it is? You know, is it this reason? I think it may be one of a few. I mean, the mayor likes to point out that he's 6-0 in elections, but he's even more than that. The time where I was on his team was when I was still managing congressional campaigns, and he headed up the DTRIP, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, in 2006, and he basically designed the strategy and personally recruited the candidates all over the country, and the Democrats took back the House and Senate for the first time in a dozen years. So, I mean, he truly is a master strategist, and he's done that for himself, even going back to his own first congressional race. I wouldn't have bet against him in the next election, although he was vulnerable. And, you know, you could see, I don't think that emotion was an act at all. I think that he really struggled with this. And I think that he loved being mayor, as incredibly difficult as that job is. And, you know, I don't think anybody would be surprised to see Rahm Emanuel again back in politics, whether in a national organizing effort or running himself again for potentially a higher office.
I wonder about that. Certainly people ask that question, and I just have to wonder, after this job and the toll it takes, I'm not sure that I see him as a candidate for office again.
Yeah, I see that too. But at the same time, and look, you and I have known a lot of these guys, candidates and incumbents, and he, more than just about anyone I know, he loves the fight. He loves being in it. I think that, you know, a lot of candidates, yes, they want to win and they want to govern and they want to do good things. A lot of them really love the juice of being in the fight. It makes them feel alive and at their best, and a lot of them love people, you know. That's part and parcel of it. But, you know, if you think about it, Rick, the last, 30 years? Daley's full tenure and then Rahm's 8 years. There have been a lot of elections in there, and they've chosen those two guys, even when they were unpopular. The job of running this city gets harder and harder, maybe harder now than at any point in recent history. And the Chicagoans generally choose somebody who's substantial and is viewed as a tough leader that can lead a tough city. I mean, that sounds a bit cliche, but it's true. And I think that's going to play out again over the next 6-8 months.
Well, I have my Tribune colleague Bill Ruthart on the show later, and we have a story in Sunday's paper where it's just the monstrously complex job that it will be for the next mayor. And the fiscal issues are immense, the issues of crime, and obviously no easy solution for that, the economic challenges for many city neighborhoods. It's never an easy job, but this is really a very, very critical time for the city.
It is, and you already have, 10, 12 candidates. You'll probably get another 5. You've got some big names. You've got some electeds. You've got people who aren't elected. But I think that after several months, a lot of those candidates are going to shake out, even if they stay in the race, and it's going to narrow down to some very experienced people. I think that's going to stand out. And that's how it was with Rahm. And not everybody thought Rahm was warm and fuzzy. In fact, I don't know. I know about one or two people that think that in any degree.
Even after this, even after the sweater commercial?
Right. Well, I guess that helped, the gray sweater. But look, when he came in, and I was involved in that race against him, and we came in second at the time 8 years ago with Gary Chico's campaign, Rahm's resume on paper at the time, I mean, you're talking about a chief of staff for one president, a political director for another, a congressman, and had been chair of the party, and had also had private sector business experience. He had a congressional base in, 8 or $10 million. I mean, he was formidable, not just as a candidate, but as a serious person. And who's going to be that person this time is the question. And, you know, there's a lot of rumblings about, well, I guess Toni Preckwinkle is going to announce her campaign tomorrow, or exploratory committee. And she has gravitas. I mean, anybody who's president of Cook County, you can agree or disagree with what she's doing. She may get in, and she would be a formidable. Paul Vallis has gotten a bit of traction, and he's run major school systems. He's not an insubstantial person. He's a smart and idea guy. And if Gary Chico runs again, he's arguably on paper the most experienced of anyone, because he's run nearly every major department in the city over 30 years, and a lot of them successfully. The city colleges and the schools, and also being chief of staff for Daley. So I think those types of people are going to, if they run, those types of people are going to stand out. I think that Chicago is in such a perilous position that it's sort of a don't turn the keys over to a rookie time. It's not amateur hour. There's really serious stuff. Ideas and vision matter a lot too, Rick. But I think the people are, once again, want to have somebody who's really prepared to do the job on day one and not have this enormous learning curve.
Well, you had Emmanuel come into office saying that this, after 22 years of Daley, the people wanted somebody to make the tough decisions. Tough decisions are not always politically popular decisions, as we know.
That's right.
And quite frankly, if you think we've had tough decisions in the past, stay tuned. There's a lot
exactly.
of that. Michael Golden, strategist, author, entrepreneur, senior fellow at the Adlai E. Stevenson Center on Democracy. Michael, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Always love being on The Spin, Rick. Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Last week, featured congressional hearings on social media, cybersecurity, disinformation. And during one of these House hearings, a right-wing conspiracy theorist got up to interrupt the testimony. And this prompted, for me, one of the most unique ways I've ever seen someone shut down a protester. Missouri Republican Congressman Billy Long gets the credit.
Trump, help us. Please help us, Mr. President, before it is too late, because Jack Dorsey is trying to influence the election, to sway the election.
What she's saying, I can't understand her. What?
Steal the election. That is why he is censoring and shadow banning.
How about it in? 12 and a half, 15, 7 and a half, $20, 2 and a half, 5, 7 and a half, 30. Hit $30 down here, 2 and a half, 5, 35, 7 and a half, 40. Hit $40, 2 and a half, 5, 5, 45, 7 and a half, 50. Hit $50 down here, 2 and a half, 5,
35, 7 and a half, 50. Officer, will you escort this young lady out, please?
Hit 2 and a half, now 5, 65, 7 and a half, 70. Up 2 and a half, now 5, 75, 7 and a half, $80 to 5, 85, 90. Hit $100, 10, 10, 10 and a quarter, 1 and a quarter, 1 and a half, 7 and a half, 2, 2 and a quarter. Hit 2 and a half, 7 and a half, 3, able to bomb 300, hit 3 and a quarter, cut 3 and a quarter, now half, half, 3 and a half, 7 and a half, 400, hit but a 4, 4 and a quarter, 4 and a half, we're selling the cell phone there, 4 and a quarter, 4 and a half, hit 4 and a half, 475, 500, 5, 5 and a quarter, 5 and a half. I yield back.
That is Republican Congressman Billy Long of Missouri. Well, joining me now on the phone is the Illinois Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady from Bloomington. And Leader Brady, I figured that you'd be familiar with hearing that kind of exchange.
Well, it sounds like the Illinois House as well. But no, anyway.
I never think that it's being up for auction in the Illinois legislature, okay?
Oh, you don't, huh?
I'm trying to be positive here.
Yes. Well, it was quite creative. You'd have to give the congressman a credit for, as you did, for making the most of this bad situation.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning. And, you know, here we are post Labor Day, the traditional time that the campaigns intensify. And I'm kind of curious, what is the Senate Republican political agenda as you see it?
Well, for us, it is about gaining control or more control. In our case, it's two seats, at least two seats of the new seats that we have up for election to get us into a position where we're in a simple minority. The dominance, as we've seen in this election, is all about taking power, frankly, away from Mike Madigan and John Culleton, the power that has put Illinois into the position that it's been in for the last four decades. As we saw just last week, Senate Republicans who I have up for re-election are running against Senate Democrats who ran an ad calling for term limits on Speaker Madigan. And his power was ever wielding again. He has now had the situation where his influence and his allies have called for those Senate Democrats to pull those ads who are running against our candidates, Mike Connolly, John Kern, and Tom Rooney, to pull those ads, flip-flopping really essentially on term limits on Mike Madigan. But the issue, I think, that even the Democrats know is that there's been one party rule, one individual who's been in power for far too long, and this state needs a fresh influence, and we Republicans are about bringing that to the state on this election day.
But as a leader in the Senate, and obviously minority leader to Senate President John Cullerton, how does running against the House Speaker fit into that kind of a strategy?
Well, clearly, there is nobody who has more disdain toward them than Speaker Mike Madigan. He is the head of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has run the state into the ground for the last four decades. And John Culleton is president of the Senate. Our position is we want to take him out of a supermajority position that they gained through a gerrymandered map, in my opinion. And we've got great candidates who we think we can pick up at least two seats. And what that helps us do is it not only helps us bring votes to the gubernatorial election, which is important to us for a fair map to reelect Bruce Rauner, but it also helps us stave off the potential of a tax hike or a Pritzker graduated tax rate under a constitutional amendment. So our chamber, it's very important that we pick up two seats to stop the Madigan-Pritzker-Colleton dominance that we're really worried about the agenda. I mean, J.B. Pritzker now is talking about a mileage tax on motorists.
He's not just now talking about it. He brought it up in January in a Daily Herald editorial. I mean, and saying it's under consideration, that everything should be on the table. It's something that should be explored. I mean, obviously, obviously there's a political vulnerability there. I'm not denying that.
We balanced a budget last year after a huge Madigan tax increase, but we balanced a budget. Have you ever seen a time when a candidate for governor has threatened another tax increase on top of the tax increase after we just balanced a budget? I just don't understand the gumption of J.B. Pritzker. That's just the influence that he's under. The Democrats, Mike Madigan, John Coles, and J.B. Pritzker just want more revenue taken out of the families of Illinois, which I'm fearful will continue to force people to leave this state. And our best asset is the people who live here.
We're speaking with Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady from Bloomington. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me on the phone from Bloomington is the Senate Republican leader of the Illinois State Senate, Bill Brady. We're talking about Republican politics and Republican politics statewide. Senator, I'm curious about, I know how much that Bruce Rauner has put into campaigns regarding trying to tarnish Mike Madigan. And I spoke to Chris Mooney at the U of I about this too, about, you know, this has gone on since before the 2014 campaigns. Is there a diminished return now on the investment in attacking Mike Madigan, in your view?
Well, I think that the point being is that the people want a change. They want Mike Madigan to leave office, frankly. They want a term limits. They want, and tying Democrat candidates to the Democratic Party chair of Illinois and its four-decade Speaker of the House, it really resonates. I mean, look at this. We go back to this example where three Democratic challengers against three of our candidates were running term limit ads on Mike Madigan, and yet he still had the ability to have them force them to pull those ads because that's what he wanted. And people are tired of that kind of dictatorship that they believe has put Illinois in the position we're in. So he is the pivotal point of what people want to see different in Illinois. And that's, you know, one of the reasons my candidates, John Kern, Tom Rooney, and Mike Connolly, are for term limits. Why I'm for term limits? Why Bruce Rauner is for term limits? They believe more power should be given back to the people.
But, I mean, you've had a lengthy tenure in the legislature. Even if we adopted a term limits amendment, it wouldn't take effect for years. And
it probably wouldn't have any effect on the tenure of Mike Madigan, but it would stop for the future politicians from ever being able to have that type of reign on the only government. That doesn't mean people can't have a good career in public service. They can serve 10 years in the House, serve 10 years in the Senate, serve 10 years in Congress, have a great public service career. But the Illinois legislature is designed to be made up of citizen legislators. And if you look at it, it's the people like Mike Madigan, who are in powerful positions, who've been around for what the voters believe is far too long.
You know, that raises an interesting point. And of course, we've, you know, known for years that while it's supposed to be a part-time legislature, given, and perhaps this was more true during the Blagojevich era of special sessions after special sessions, where it really kind of morphed into a full-time legislature. I mean, much of the criticism about Madigan and others is, you know, having outside income. Why not just make it a full-time legislature and you're banned from any outside income or outside work?
Yeah, I've, It's an interesting concept, not one that I'm ready to embrace. I think a citizen legislature where you have outside interests. Now, if those interests tie into your well-being, ties into your political influence, that's a different story. But that needs to be dealt with differently.
Tell me, you know, obviously you support Bruce Rauner's reelection, but, you know, downstate, you know, which has grown more Republican, and we still seem to have this issue of perhaps divided divisions among core socially conservative Republicans towards Bruce Rauner. How much as the Senate Republican leader, and how much do Senate Republican candidates have to also try to help bridge that kind of rift?
Well, a lot. It's becoming easier and easier as people get to know the connection between J.B. Pritzker and his policies and Mike Madigan and John Culleton. There's no question that I don't agree with everything that Bruce Rauner stands for, but he has made it. He's made some very good changes as governor that we never would have seen if he were not reelected. Education funding with Republican support, reforms in education, the way we fund. We've seen a balanced budget this year, Medicaid reforms, very good things that he's been able to accomplish that we would not have seen had the Democrats been able to put Pat Quinn back into office because of the Democratic stronghold from Chicago. When independents, Republicans, and even Democrats downstate see that, even though they may not have agreed with some of the governor's actions on social issues that the Democrats used to trap him, they realize that the future of the state is in the hands of this election. And they realize that J.B. Pritzker's graduated tax hike and the Democrats ushering that in and his tax increases and his taxes on mileage and other things are not going to be beneficial to rebuilding Illinois. And that message really trumps, no pun intended, it really trumps a lot of what the concerns of some of the downstaters might be. And they're coming back home. And I even see the independents and Democrats as you're out in parade routes and going door to door, realizing that the future of this state is in the hands of this election. And Bruce Rauner, if nothing else, needs to be elected to be a check against the Chicago political machine.
But is there energy behind that message? And you know, obviously, you know, we hear about energized Democrats, but is there energy for Republican turnout, or is that still remain a question?
There is, and what I see happening, and maybe I'm not always 100% right. But what I see happening, if people are realizing that this is not a national agenda, I mean, there's no question that the national scene and some of the president's tweets and other things go south on people, even though I think he's done much in terms of policy. But as people realize this isn't a national election, this is a state election about the future of Illinois. And it's about whether or not you want to give control and another map to Mike Madigan and John Culleton. They realize how important this is. And as we move away from the national viewpoint to concern about our state and our local schools and other things, that enthusiasm is moving closer and closer. And I think that happens every day between now and the election.
One of the things, and I've written about this too, that the issue, and you mentioned about the drawing of district lines, I mean, to me, I know it's kind of a wonky thing, but control of the map is, I mean, that is like the Holy Grail for the legislature, for the political parties. And yes, while, you know, we've talked about trying to make that process more fair, the system is what it is right now. And I'm kind of just surprised that that isn't more driving as part of Bruce Rauner's rhetoric, campaign rhetoric, that, you know, this is about the map, folks. Much in the same respect that, you know, if you don't like Donald Trump, it was about the Supreme Court justices. You know, kind of in that vein.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and people are starting to pick up on that. I would say almost co-equal to fighting against Pritzker's tax hike or hikes is the map. And Illinois, in my opinion, under fair maps would go Republican legislatively because of the dominance in of the Democratic Chicago population. Statewide will probably be swing state for a long time. But from a legislative standpoint, fair mapping, I believe we would be Republican. Bruce Rauner's the only thing that would stop John Culleton and Mike Madigan from drawing a free-handed, another gerrymandered map. And I think it's as important to the future of the state as fighting against the Pritzker tax hike.
We've been speaking with Illinois Senate Republican Leader Bill Brady from Bloomington. Leader Brady, thank you as always for joining me this morning.
Great to be with you. Have a great day.
We'll be back with more right after this.
Now, the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Welcome back for your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River and the lake. A little choppy out there on the lake. The wind's blowing off the lake today. And here, joining me in the studio, is my good friend and colleague Bill Ruthart, part of the Chicago Tribune's political team, whose specialty is covering the mayor. And I'm glad I could wake you up, because I figured you had to be sound asleep after the week that you've had.
You know, it was a grueling week, but I've seen worse. We're halfway to a Saturday Night Live super fan skit here with all this Bears gear we have on. I guess we're ready for football season, huh?
Da Bears. Well, yeah, I think, as I said, after this kind of... Remember, it was supposed to be a short week last week, right? Yeah.
Supposedly.
I was telling Andy earlier that at least the Bears, it's like we'll be able to flip the channel for at least a little bit and get out of the political insanity that has infested our lives. We talked to Bill Brady in the last segment about state politics a little bit, and I didn't get the chance to ask him, but I'm kind of curious what your take is about now with this bombshell news of Emanuel not seeking re-election. All of the talk is who's going to be the next mayor, who's running, who's in, who's out. It sucked all of the political oxygen for the gubernatorial race right out the
this
door.
May be the only place in America where a mayor's race can overshadow a race for governor.
I don't know about that. I mean, New York,
maybe, but New York's mayoral races haven't seen anything like we're about to see in this upcoming race in February. I mean, we've already have a dozen candidates in. We have another five or six prominent elected official types looking at jumping in the race now. I think, you know, when we get closer to November, the last few weeks, people will, you know, Pritzker and Rauner will make to it to make sure people are paying attention to them. And I'm sure, I mean, we're already seeing nonstop ads from
and
the two
have,
of those, and
right.
I mean, what's the over under and how many of those ads we'll see during the Bears game tonight, right? I mean, so you know, they're there, but yeah, certainly right now in this moment, everyone is chattering in the, at least in political circles in Chicago, about who's going to succeed Rahm Emanuel.
Well, and I think, you know, there comes an issue here for Democrats, for Pritzker and those, because you're obviously counting on big turnout in Chicago. You're counting on that out of the city. You're counting on that as kind of helping the blue wave that gets talked about, if it exists in reality. And now I almost have to wonder if you've got to devote even more resources to get out the vote efforts to avoid complacency. And two, again, a misdirection, a focus on look over here at the mayor's race and not what lies ahead on November 6th.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly something that they'll, you know, consider. I think, you know, another thing simply could be reaching out to all these people running for mayor and saying, hey, if you want to weave in the importance of this November election into your narrative, we'd appreciate it, right? Because they all have an interest in, and obviously have an ally in the governor's mansion in Springfield. So, you know, I think Pritzker's one of the things he's done consistently throughout this as he has put money into the party infrastructure, what he's, you know, put millions of dollars into, you know, the state organization that's trickled down into the counties, and that helps your field operation. That's what drives turnout. And, you know, in Chicago, it's a little bit of a different dynamic. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, what's happening nationally, what's happened here in Illinois over the last 4 years, it doesn't have a lot of Democrats too pleased. I think there's plenty of reasons to turn out. There'll probably just be a lot of reminders between now and November.
I'm curious what your thoughts are about what Mayor Emanuel said about the issue of how he doesn't, at the time when he made his announcement, that he didn't think the winning candidate was in the race yet. And you know, he's kind of elaborated on that, too, is that, well, look at this field. That isn't stopping, you know, other prominent names from, you know, on Monday we have Tony Preckwinkle basically taking the wraps off a campaign for mayor with an exploratory committee. But I'm curious about that because, I mean, you do have people like Paul Vallis, who has experience here. Obviously, the former police superintendent, Gary McCarthy. I'm not sure that the field had been, when Emanuel looks at the field that it existed at the time when he says, I'm done, I don't think that was ever the final field anyway.
It was getting close. I think it was a classic Emanuel move to throw shade at all 12 of the folks who even dared challenge him, right? And, you know, their rebuttal is he's getting out because he decided he couldn't win. I don't know that that was necessarily the case either. I think what it does is it's his attempt to delegitimize those candidates because at some point there's going to be someone in this race who Emanuel may not overtly endorse, but there will be a wink and a nod and probably a heck of a lot of Rahm Emanuel donors lining up behind someone. And so that someone is not currently in the race. And so by, throwing shade at the group that's sent out so far, that was his way of signaling to voters that stay tuned. We're going to have some other heavy hitters getting in this thing.
Well, and truly, I'm like, for example, if Emanuel had sought a third term, Tony Preckwinkle wouldn't be.
Yeah, of course not.
At it.
Right.
Susana Mendoza, the state comptroller, other Gary Chico, other.
Yeah, so you got Gary Chico, who ran in 2011, finished a distant second. He was Daley's chief of staff, ran the school board in the Parks District. Susana Mendoza co-chaired Emanuel's campaign last time around with Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who also is considering a run for mayor now. So those are two Emanuel allies. Preckwinkle thought about it 4 years ago, decided she wanted to wrap up her work on the county's finances. She's 71 years old, would be 72 by the time she took office. So people are, as difficult as the job is, that's some of the whispers going around in political circles already is she up for, that job in her 70s? Same with Bill Daley, former White House chief of staff under Obama, took Emanuel's place at the White House, Commerce Secretary under Clinton. He's 70 years old. He's contemplated many a run for governor and pulled the plug every time. So, again, and at 70 years old, is he ready to try to bring the Daley name back to City Hall? So,
people ready for the Daley name back?
Right, especially as Democratic politics continue to drift toward the left. Daley would have to answer for his brother's financial mismanagement of the city, basically the parking meter deal, the huge pension obligations that Emanuel's been working for the last 8 years to a hole you've dug, somewhat way out of, but it's still a pretty big ditch. And then you got, the legacy of his father, Richard J. Daley, and the deep segregation of Chicago that continues to be a narrative in Democratic politics in this town as you see the booming development that's going on downtown with cranes dotting the skyline and still not a lot of economic development opportunity on the south and west sides.
We're speaking with my Tribune colleague, Bill Ruthart. We're talking about the race for mayor. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by Bill Ruthart, a member of the Chicago Tribune political team, specializes in covering the now outgoing mayor, as well as who's going to be mayor next. And let's take a look. Who's in? Who's in?
So the main candidates who are in so far, and they
and
are.
I want to remind you, we have news at 9 o'clock. So okay.
So there's a dozen who have declared all before Emanuel got out. They are former Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy, former Chicago Public Schools CEO Paul Vallis, former Chicago Police Board President and former Federal Prosecutor Lori Lightfoot, current Cook County Circuit Court Clerk Dorothy Brown, whose office has been under federal investigation for the last several years, millionaire businessman Willie Wilson, who ran last time, Chicago Principals Association President Troy LaRavier, activist J. Maul Green, tech entrepreneur Neil Salas Griffin, Southwest Side attorney Jerry Joyce, policy consultant Amara Enya, attorney John Koslar, and DePaul student Matthew Roney. So there you go.
And then, as we mentioned before the break, there those are among the main people who are eyeing this.
Yeah, so then you've got Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, who's taking a look. You've got Congressman Louis Gutierrez, Northside Congressman Mike Quigley, Bill Daley, and Gary Chico, who we mentioned was a longtime City Hall operative and knows how to run the city well. So those are probably the five bigger names that are taking a look, but there will be others as well.
Now, I had Michael Golden, who's a political strategist, and he's worked on Chico's campaign,
right.
And he mentioned his belief that this is going to be an experience kind of choice, and that when you look at what's confronting the city, as we write about in the Sunday Tribune, just the massive complex issues that whoever becomes mayor is going to face. No one should view this as a prize. Certainly everybody would love it, but this is not going to be a prize job. But I wonder, given that issue of experience, you also have the issues that we talked about where you kind of have this more leftward movement of Democrats in urban areas that we've seen in other campaigns across the country.
Here's my observation on that. I think the leftward movement, the uber progressiveness we're seeing, I think that plays out big time in the aldermanic races, neighborhood by neighborhood. I think that narrative has traction, and it doesn't take a lot of money to get that message out. I'm not sure that's going to be the case on the same level in the mayor's race. And here's why. One, as you mentioned, Chicagoans, when they vote for mayor, they want to vote for somebody they know can do the job. That at the end of the day, there's a lot of stuff that hits the fan in the city, and they want to make sure that whoever is in the chair can handle it and the city is in good hands. The other is the money equation. I mean, Rahm Emanuel spent $27 million last time around to get his message out in television ads. I'm not sure the folks that have the most progressive message in this race will have the kind of money to get that message out necessarily. The Troy LaRaviers of the world, who appeared in, Bernie Sanders' ad. Last check, Troy LaRavier had $20,000 in his campaign fund. Lori Lightfoot is positioning herself as a progressive, although she'll face questions as her time as a prosecutor and whatnot, and some background that may run counter to that. But she's raised, a couple $100,000. If a more centrist Democrat gets in this race and gets the money in town behind them, they're the interests of LaSalle Street, the types of developers and bankers and lawyers who filled Emanuel's campaign, that may drown some of that out. So that'll be a key dynamic to watch unfold. Now, if Louis Gutierrez gets in and has money behind him and he's shown an ability to fundraise, then you've got a progressive message paired with some
experience.
So it'll be fascinating. There's so many layers and wrinkles to this. And Preckwinkle certainly would be able to raise some money. She would probably be able to solidify union support relatively quickly. I'm not sure she would satisfy the very far left type of politics we've seen. She's more of an old school, you know, political boss.
And you kind of see there's old guard Democrats behind. I mean, she's also the Cook County Democratic chairman as a result of the loss
but
by Joe Berrio.
She certainly could appeal on the policing issue, which is a major component of this race, given Laquan McDonald. And we have Jason Van Dyke's murder trial, jury selection for that ongoing. She can appeal in a progressive manner on that topic in particular. She's always been, she has a long track record of being in favor of criminal justice reform, and long has been critical of, you know, policing issues in the city. So she certainly would have credibility on that issue, but I'm not sure you're going to see her out there saying we want to, you know, institute a LaSalle Street tax or a head tax or a commuter tax or some of this
stuff
you hear progressives
talk
about.
But you also had the pop tax that was hers. And, you know, what does it say about a tax you author that you end up seeing get repealed?
Which is what's going to cause her, that's causing heartburn and consternation among the business interests in town, right? They are concerned about that. And some say, you know, behind the scenes that, oh, we think she's learned her lesson, she won't try something like that again. There's others that are very concerned about it. So, you know, she's been furiously dialing all kinds of big dollar donors and business interests in town, as well as union leaders, to try to line up support. So is Susana Mendoza, although she publicly won't acknowledge it, but we know we've talked to people directly who've received phone calls from her. And for now, the unions have decided to kind of hang out on the sidelines for a bit and see how these things develop. But certainly Preckwinkle establishing an exploratory committee tomorrow is her way of trying to get a leg up and get this kind of appearance of new front runner status, as Mendoza has to hang back and run her race for comptroller
on the November 6th right. ballot. But as we quote a labor guy in the story, if she wants in, nothing's going to stop her. It doesn't matter who else is in this thing. And you know, there's the issue where, as you mentioned about, you know, some critics and Preckwinkle's age and the age of some of the other candidates. Mendoza, as we've seen, is a very energetic campaigner. The question being, though, you know, is she have the depth of experience?
Right. That'll certainly be a question. She'll point to having two quote unquote executive offices. She was city clerk, and for a short time now she's been comptroller. But yeah, that'll be a fair question to ask, right? I think she's in her, you know, early 40s, a lot of experience for that age. She was involved in politics at a very young age in the state legislature. So yeah, that'll be certainly be an element to watch. But you know, the one thing we also should mention is there was no quote unquote true Latino in the race today. Neil Salas Griffin has some Latino heritage as well as African American, but there was no prototypical Latino candidate in the race when Emmanuel was in, and that was, you know, Jesus Chuy Garcia was looking at it, and then when Gutierrez announced he was going to retire from Congress, Chuy is now in line to win that seat in November. It sounds unlikely that he would dip his toe in the mayoral pond, so to speak. But if Gutierrez or Mendoza runs, then you have a Latino candidate. You still have this dynamic of the city being basically a third African-American, a third Latino, a third white. And so that also puts a new wrinkle into the race that was not present before Emmanuel announced that he was not going to run for a third term.
You touched on it, and last question, but the business community is still going to have an amazing say over, you know, when it comes to the donations and all of that. And I think that's a key to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, the economy in Chicago, you could say there's many areas you can criticize Rahm Emanuel on. One it's hard to is the economic recovery of the city since the recession on his watch. The economy's booming. All kinds of corporate headquarters have relocated from the suburbs and from other states to downtown. There are some 50 cranes up all over downtown in the West Loop. Those folks are loving that right now. They don't want to see it change. The counter argument is
not nearly enough of that is going on in the neighborhoods in this city, and you will see that narrative play out throughout the race. So whoever does have the business money is going to have to answer that critical question as well.
That's Bill Ruthart, my Tribune colleague, member of the political team at the Tribune, covering did yeoman service this past week. And I'm going to let you go home and go back to sleep now for a little bit so you can watch the Bears game tonight. But Bill, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Always good to be on, Rick.